Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR. Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to overshadow so many other public health issues in our community, bubbling just beneath the surface. Now, you may remember, before the pandemic, one of the biggest issues was the opioid epidemic. Well, that has not gone away. It remains a problem for the addicted, and the fallout from it is impacting those who need pain management, even temporarily. Well, today is International Overdose Awareness Day, and we are discussing the evolving problem and some possible solutions. My guests are Dr. Walter Bland, Vice Chair of Clinical Services, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at Howard University Hospital, and Dr. Beverly Settle Reeves, Care Manager with the Urban Health Initiative at Howard University. If you have a comment, if you have a question about the opioid epidemic, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're welcome to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Bland, Dr. Settles Reeves, thank you both for joining the conversation again.
Thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely. Let me throw a couple of numbers at you first. And these are just in the District of Columbia, some of the latest numbers we've been able to kind of pull up. Some 300 opioid-related deaths per year, 1,200 opioid emergency room visits per year. The opioid mortality rate, 34.7 deaths per 100,000 persons compared to 14.6 deaths per 100,000 persons. That's the national average. My goodness. Dr. Settles Reeves, what's going on in the district? Why is this continuing to be such an issue in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think one of the major problems is still access to care, awareness. I mean, we in the midst know that, you know, what's going on, but, you know, the average person out there, they're in the midst of it. They're dealing with other social issues, other health issues, and this thing has just escalated with an overlying pandemic. We thought we were trying to get hold of it between 2017 and 2018, but then it took off again. And those numbers that you quoted are real. I mean, in 2018, we went from 17 deaths approximately per month in D.C. 2018, we went to 23 and up to 34, 2020, during the height of the pandemic. And even as of this year, we're close to 20 per month. I've lost two patients this year myself. So it's still a disconnect. And there's still a lack of education and access and awareness, even amongst the professional community.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that, you know, although D.C. has lots of providers and we connect with lots of providers and we ourselves do a lot at Howard University, I just think that the system still has gaps. And it's important that we fill the gaps by informing and staying connected to one another as agencies that treat the patients, provide services to patients. It's overwhelming for one agency to do it alone. It is a lot. Mm-hmm. And they don't come with just the fact that they're opiate addicted. They come with many, many other comorbid conditions.
Hmm. Dr. Bland, Dr. Settles Reeves is certainly talking about those who are already in it, but how do they get in it before they get to the needing of the treatment? What are the linchpins? What are the gateways that lead them to the addiction? To might it be heroin? Might it be the pills? What is it that gets them there that may not get other people there?
In addition to those factors Dr. Settles Reed spoke of, we know that some persons become addicted to opioids through treatment for pain. And one of the strategies to reduce that is by prescribing pain medication in limited amounts and working with patients to let them know that the medications for pain are not to be given at a dose that it necessarily relieves the pain, but it makes the pain tolerable. Because one thing that we know, the longer you take pain medications, the more at risk you are for developing tolerance to it. That means it requires a higher dose to get the same level of relief. And that is one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is that no one starts to use heroin with the belief that they're going to become addicted. That's just not what we believe. We feel we're strong enough not to become addicted to it. It's weak persons that become addicted. But like most addictions, it gets to a slippery slope. You're using it once a day. Then it's twice a day. Then it's three times a day. And eventually, your entire life, for many, becomes revolving around recovering from the effects of the drugs or seeking drugs. So those are two of the ways that, you know, persons can become addicted to medication. And just to add to what Dr. Suttles-Reeves said, we're seeing this increase in overdose because most of the heroin contains fentanyl, which is 50 to 100 times more powerful than heroin in terms of its ability to result in overdose.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the opioid epidemic. Where are we now? What are the issues and what are some of the possible solutions? If you have a comment or if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. Jonathan calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jonathan. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Good evening. My name is Jonathan, and I just wanted to say very deep and sensitive topic because I'm basically one that's in that situation. I want to share that one of my ways of getting hooked and on opioids is I was in a very bad car accident, and I heard you speaking about the ways and the gateways of us getting connected to this drug use of opioids. And I was given a prescription by a doctor. I was prescribed at one time morphine. Oxycodone and Dilaudid at one time, which increased my tolerance level to a point that it was beyond control. Then they came up with this opioid epidemic, which put the press and the stop sign on doctors where they couldn't give you that much anymore because they were being screened and they were being checked by the you know, the federal government in terms of how much they're giving people. At that point, my doctor changed my medication from that much medicine to one medication, which was methadone. And at that time, it decreased my level of being able to take it and tolerate it. And that led me to street drugs because what it did was it put me in the street because I was not able to suffice for that tolerance that they had helped create in me.
So, but, Jonathan, let me ask you two questions. How long ago was your accident, and where are you now in your addiction?
Okay. My accident was in 2014.
Okay.
When I almost lost my leg.
Okay.
And my life as well. Thank God that I'm still alive. I'm grateful to that. However, I had to go into a program, which was a few months ago. I made it beyond myself because I kept on what people might was ODing off of, which fentanyl.
Right.
You know, And my last episode with it, I did die. They revived me again through the grace of God, brought me back, and I decided to take my tail into a program where I need help. I went to a program called Penn North in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yep.
And I want to
Pennsylvania Avenue and North Avenue. Yes, I'm familiar with it.
And I want to give this shout out to the Chevrolet Health Clinic, because there are some people there that really care about the souls and the lives of men and women in that program. First and foremost, Miss Sonia, Miss Shaw, and Miss Reed.
Okay.
These ladies did not only you said something that was so major. What is it, and how are we failing when we come out of places like this and it's not working? But these women walked with me side by side, and a brother named Greg, side by side going in and side by side going out. See, addiction doesn't start just when you pick up a drug. There's other things and avenues that happen in your life.
Well, Jonathan, I appreciate your journey, and I hope you continue to stay healthy and to continue to be healthy. I've got a lot of issues I've got to get to, and we have other people on the line. But bless you, and we hope that you are able to move through this clean process. I appreciate what you've shared with us.
And Jonathan, I also would like to encourage you to continue in your recovery.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the opioid epidemic. This is International Opioid Overdose Awareness Day, a time for us to discuss some of the problems and some possible solutions. Kathy, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Kathy. What's on your mind?
Yes, and thank you for having another excellent show with a really, really relevant topic.
Thank you.
One of your previous, I think your guest said that a lot of people become addicted as a result of, you know, injuries and prescription pain meds. The other pain that causes a lot of people to become addicted is psychic pain. I'm a former addiction counselor, and a lot of people are really self-medicating and using drugs to really distance themselves from psychic pain, pain that was done to them during childhood, pain that was done to them during early adulthood.
So you're talking about trauma. You're talking about trauma.
Shame. Shame is also a form of psychic pain. And it's when you're living in a community where you are not fully empowered, where you have the perception that you're not fully empowered, there's a level of discomfort that some people choose to address with drinking and ingesting substances. And as we weather the pandemic, a lot of people are forced to be indoors. They're forced to come in contact with those issues that they're just not ready to deal with. And as a result, they increase their usage. And we're seeing a lot of, deaths from addiction. Mm-hmm. And yes, there have always been bad drugs out there. And but it's a lot of pain that people are just not dealing with. And it's psychic pain.
Yeah.
Yes, and you know, some people.
Thank you, Kathy, for your comments. Go right ahead, Doctor.
That as to what they call diseases of despair.
Yeah.
That psychic pain, and we do know that drugs can give temporary relief, but often it results in long-term misery.
Yeah.
And many times those traumatic experiences. They come not only from injuries, when we talk about the injuries and the pain, but also the psychological effect of having such a traumatic injury. You know, we've had a patient who almost had an arm severed around 17, and that's when his addiction started, because he started with painkillers. But also the psychology of it, because, you know, he didn't realize it had gotten out of control, and then when it was, he was ashamed, and they don't share what's going on with them emotionally many times. And then you're right, they self-medicate to keep the pain away, to keep the what if this hadn't happened to me pain away. So that's absolutely critical. We get to spend a little more time with our patients, so we get to hear more of the study, the whole story of what really happened.
Indeed. Let me go to Monica. Monica, call it. Oh, we lost Monica. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is International Opioid Overdose Awareness Day, and we are talking about all issues surrounding the concerns about opioid overdoses, addictions. How do these things happen to us? Don't forget, prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, the United States, federally, local governments were pouring literally millions of dollars into fighting this opioid epidemic in rural communities, in suburban communities, in cities. That was the big fight. And then, of course, we got hit with COVID and things began to move in that direction. But this issue has not gone away, and we are continuing to talk about it. Veronica calling from Maryland. Stay with us. You will be able to hear the program. We're going to be talking to you. Mike calling from Maryland. We're going to be talking to you as well. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2. Don't forget, download the 96.3 HD2 app to your smartphone, and you can hear this program in its entirety live. We won't drop off at 7:30. You'll hear the entire program. Also, you can hear it on 98.3 FM as well, the entire program. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This program continues on Sirius XM channel 141 in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the problem of the opioid epidemic. Today is International Overdose Awareness Day. We're discussing the evolving problem of opioid addiction and some possible solutions. My guests are Dr. Walter Bland, Vice Chair of Clinical Services, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at Howard University Hospital, and Dr. Beverly Settles-Reeves, Care Manager with the Urban Health Initiative at Howard University. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before I go back to the phone lines, there's an issue that I do want to bring up, and it's actually kind of twofold. And I'll start with you, Dr. Settles-Reeves. So we spoke to one of our callers, the first caller, and he was talking about being in a car accident, and his car accident obviously was pretty severe. And we're talking about the kind of pain that he probably had never experienced before because of damage to his leg, and that pain was probably always going to be with him because of his injury. But then you have, the kinds of pain that we know would probably be temporary, such as, surgery that you know you're going to heal from. But the healing process is going to take some time. It may take a week or two.
Yeah.
A toothache. I can speak for myself, and I've discussed this with you before, about having wisdom teeth. Had four removed at once. And two of them were impacted. This was years ago. But the pain, I'd never felt pain like that before in my life. And the doctor, he prescribed Percocet, but he only gave me a week's worth of Percocet. After that, he said Motrin.
Yes.
And I can't even share the colorful metaphors that I used.
Yes.
When I respectfully requested more Percocet.
Yes.
And but you know, to that point, because that's look, that stuff works.
It yes. most certainly does.
Let's be clear, and I think that's really kind of at the heart of the problem. But yes. the pain from that surgery eventually went away. But after 7 days, I was still in pain. After 14 days, I was still in pain, but the pain was probably 10% of what it was the week before. But now we're seeing, because this is so problematic for pharmacies, because opioids are big business, illegal business, that is, and talk to me about this, but pharmacies are reticent to carry this stuff.
Yes. Well,
because they're afraid of yes. break-ins and robberies and the like.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that is a legitimate concern. And the fact that it is, and as Dr. Bland was saying, you know, now there is a real conscious about prescribing pain medication. I actually witnessed it in one of our clinics at Howard, where a patient requested an opiate painkiller, and the physician didn't give it to them. And the patient requested it three times. They said they thought that's what they were going to get. Yeah. And the physician calmly and respectfully said, well, no, we're not going to give you that. This will work. This is an anti-inflammatory. This will help you. But you have to think about that here's a patient who was in a wheelchair who clearly suffers a great deal of pain and now anticipating and, in fact, expecting to receive this opiate painkiller, and it was Percocet, and not getting it. Just think of what that little trauma right there would occur because, okay, this patient is going to try this, and we don't know what an individual's pain tolerance is. And if someone like Dr. Bland was saying, if someone has been on painkillers for some time, they're used to being pain-free based on taking that medication, and no one wants to be in pain. And if you have a low tolerance to pain, you will take anything to keep the pain away. And it can't always be predicted that because you get 7 days of a strong painkiller that your pain will go away. You know, there's residual pain, and the more, you know, you take, then your pain tolerance could drop. So it can also become a cycle, and then the individual just wants the pain to stay away. People want to function. We have people who've gone through these traumas. They want to go back to work. They want to do this, and they got to do this. They got to take care of the kids, and they got to get back to their life, and they can't deal with that pain.
But Dr. Bland, what about situations where, as I said, it could be, you know, it can be a surgery where we know that 10 times out of 10 that any kind of invasive surgery, even if it is routine, somebody cuts you.
You're going to have pain.
You're going to have pain. But even if it is routine,
yeah.
And even if the pain is severe,
right.
And like let's say it's what? Let's say it's a cesarean. Okay. So I don't know. I've seen it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a woman thing. But I will sympathize. Can't empathize, but I will sympathize with that. But we do know that women do recover from those things, but the pain can be, you know, obviously severe. But if they're going to recover from it, Dr. Bland, how do you balance that? If you can't get it from your pharmacist when it is first prescribed,
yeah.
then and you may not be able to get it for what, 2 days?
Yeah.
That's a guess.
Okay. Well, one method is to manage the patient's expectations as to what the medicine is going to do. That we don't necessarily want to give enough medicine to completely alleviate the pain, but to make it tolerable. So by doing that, the expectations of the patient changes. And only using the lowest dose for the shortest period of time before changing to a non-addictive medication, such as what happened when you had your wisdom teeth removed.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned earlier in the show that doctors at one time were being expected to relieve pain. In fact, pain was referred to as the fifth vital sign, like breathing, pulse, blood pressure. It was the fifth vital sign, and doctors were being rated on that. You know, if the patient is unhappy because you're not managing their pain.
Yeah, because what is considered normal is no pain.
That's right. Normal
exactly.
is no pain.
Exactly.
And that our goal is to get patients to say that you've had a surgery procedure. Pain is a natural part of the recovery. And that our goal is to make the pain tolerable by giving you the lowest amount of medication for the shortest period of time to allow you to function. And then we'll switch you to a non-opioid medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, today we're talking about International Overdose Awareness Day. I would just like to make sure that everyone knows what a heroin overdose looks like. How can you recognize someone who's overdosing? And so the major indication of an overdose is the person has reduced or he has stopped breathing. He or she has stopped breathing. So they may have shallow breaths. They may be gasping for air. Their skin may turn pale. The fingertips may turn blue. Or indicating that they're not getting enough oxygen. Also, if you're able to see the pupils of the eyes, the pupils become somewhat pinpoint. They're small. The person might also have nausea and vomiting. So those are things to indicate that the person possibly is overdosed. So I think it's important for, you know, your audience
mm-hmm.
to be able to identify someone who may be suffering from an overdose.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mike, calling from Maryland. Mike, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'll be brief. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So, yes, addiction is bad. I'm with you. No one wants to see anybody addicted. Okay, everybody's in agreement. The doctors want everybody to be well. I get that. This is my problem with this opioid epidemic. I'm middle-aged, a black man, and I remember very well the pain and suffering that my people had during the crack era. There were tougher sentences created for us. We were sent away. We were separated from our families. We were told by high-up people, senators, chiefs of police, and so forth, that, oh, they need to make better life choices. It was just throw them away. And people are still in jail now from those sentences and laws that went in effect to hurt our people. But guess what? All of a sudden, the opioid pandemic hits, and who is it mainly affecting? Yes, I know it affects some black people. But it's mainly affecting Karen and Todd and those types. And guess what? Now they need help. They are struggling. We need more funds for them. It's all this help, help, help. In my county, in Harford County, there are signs and billboards posted everywhere at police stations, X amount of people overdose on opioids this year. There was no such thing in general for black. And why is that?
either of our guests want to talk about the politics of the epidemic?
Well, I can share with you that for the last probably four years, the highest opioid overdose rates and largest increase has been among black males. The caller is correct that the view of opioid use as a public health problem did not become that until it affected the majority community.
Right. And
but
I
currently, our community is suffering greatly from the overdose epidemic. In fact, among black males, the rate of the overdose has increased 55 to 64. It increased from 21.8 to 42.7.
Mm-hmm.
So it is still a major problem in our community, and we need to do a better job in getting persons who are dependent on opioids into treatment. We have effective treatments for opioid dependency. I can tell you, I have a patient who is 74 years old who did not start treatment until she was 69.
Mm-hmm.
She had been using for 45 years. She had been snorting heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided that she did not want her grandchildren to read about her dead from an overdose.
Yeah.
So what does that say? It doesn't make a difference how old you are.
Yeah.
You can achieve abstinence and maintain it. One of the challenges with persons who are addicted to any substance is maintaining abstinence once they've become clean and sober. That's where the challenge is. And we have effective treatment, medication treatments, pills, long-acting injectable medications, even one form of treatment for opioid dependency is a six-month implant.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to take it every day. You just go for your six-month implant and you're fine. We have a one-month long-acting injectable as well as medications that you can take on a daily basis.
But Dr. Bland, that's not what Mike is talking about.
Right.
Go ahead, Dr. Settles Reeves, please.
Yes. The gentleman, his question and his perspective is correct. The other thing you have to understand is it's not that it didn't exist in that majority population back then as well. It did exist. However, when I talk about access and being able to get into treatment, back then, those individuals went into private treatment centers where they paid cash and no one ever knew, and they continued to live their life and no one ever knew, and they got treatment. But that required a lot of money. It required going to private agencies and private physicians to get this treatment. So who else? We wouldn't hear about them then. Now it migrated into the suburban population, majority population. Their children, their youth were being seen using it more, and then it really hit through. Then their youth were dying of these overdoses. So it hit the news, it hit social media, and now it is an epidemic of everyone, as they say. But our communities could not afford the private treatments, couldn't afford to keep things secret. So we had to go to clinics. We had to get, you know, access to treatment. And a lot of that came with stigma. And that stigma came with urban African Americans living in, you know, circumstances beyond, sometimes beyond their control, and being isolated and put into this stigmatized group. So it stuck for decades. Not that it wasn't in other places, but it was under the carpet.
Yeah.
Now it's out in the open. So he's absolutely right. And you notice, as Dr. Bland said, many of the ages of a lot of our patients are baby boomers in retirement age. And they've dealt with 40 years of stigmatization.
Mike, thank you so much for your question and your comment. I appreciate your input there. Let me go to Veronica, calling from Maryland. Veronica, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Yes, speak up, please. Go right ahead.
Okay, so my name is Veronica. Thank you for taking my call. I have a nonprofit called the National Coalition for Drug Legalization. And the one thing that I think our callers need to take into consideration, especially the black community, is drug legalization of all drugs. We're in an opioid crisis right now because our drug supply isn't protected. You see an increase in crime associated with drug trafficking because of this prohibition system that came out of the Nixon administration was not working. You have an increase in, you know, the mass incarceration of our people. And if you look to see what we're being incarcerated for, it's mainly drug, low-level, nonviolent offenses. So, you know, we're going to be talking about these issues related to drugs for a long time until we seriously consider drug legalization. Thank you.
I'm confused. I'm not sure I really understand what point you're making, because what are you saying now?
So I know this is, so we're talking about overdoses associated with opioids, okay?
Right.
So why is that? Okay. It is because our drug supply is not protected. When drug users get cocaine, for example, they don't know that it has fentanyl in it. But through a regulated market where people can get drugs that they know are pure, where they know that the purity and potency standards for those drugs are kept, you know, that will help to reduce the opioid overdoses that you see right now in America. When you look to see the crime, a lot of the crime that's associated, a lot of the crime period that you see in our urban communities, a lot of it is tied to drug trafficking.
So let me stop you there. Veronica, let me stop you there, because, and I'm sure our guests can talk about this, but, you know, for example, you know, Oxycontin and codeine, Percocet, those drugs are regulated, okay? They are legal. That's why you get them from doctors. So the issue, I don't think the issue is about the legalization. I think the issue is that these drugs are, they have the potential to be addictive, which is why, hold on. Let me finish, and I can allow Dr. Bland and Dr. Suttles Reeves to talk about this. But that's why they're suggesting that you only have them for a limited amount of time, because they have people have the ability to be addicted to them. And, you know, because even if, you know, they're regulated, but no, you can only take 5 or you can only take 10 this week. And then after that, you do Tylenol, you do Motrin, because guess what? They can be dangerous. Am I on point here?
I would say so. I think when we're looking at prevention of overdose deaths, we're looking to prevent misuse, abuse, and development of dependency. Alcohol is a legal drug,
mm-hmm.
but we have people who die from alcoholism.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just because you have a week's supply of Percocet, you figure, you know, the first 2 days, and you realize, hey, that stuff works. Okay, and so you take more than you're supposed to on the third day. You can overdose.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that how I see it. And Dr. Settle Reeves, I'm sure you want to weigh in on this.
Well, just that also, yes, it's absolutely regulated. And, yes, you generally will only get, you know, a week's supply, if that, based on, you know, where they want you. But what also happens sometimes, you know, people still cross-talk, family, friends, so forth. Hey, you know, do you have any, by chance, in your cabinet any extra Percocets? And guess what? A family member or friend will say, yeah, I have some. They say, you know, I'm still having this pain. You mind if I, you know, give me a couple of those? So now you go beyond what's been prescribed. And people don't mean to harm other people, but they don't want to see someone in pain. Share their old prescription. So that's where things can get out of control as well.
Go ahead, Veronica. Veronica, speak up for me, please, because you're...
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead, real quick. Make your point.
Where does the majority of these overdoses are coming from?
Repeat that again, please.
That is not where the majority of these overdoses are coming from.
I think their point is one overdose is too many.
Yeah, but we also...
Yeah, I can't say in good conscience that I can continue, at least in this particular conversation, to entertain the thought of legalization of heroin and the like, at least not in this conversation. Maybe that's a conversation for another day, but thank you for at least raising that point.
But we do things to what we call harm reductions, like needle exchange.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And which but the needle reduction, mm-hmm. The needle exchange is not about overdose.
No.
That's about infection.
Right. Preventing infection.
Exactly. And preventing overdoses. I mean, we have to continue to talk with patients, and this is one of the things that Urban Health Initiative does. You know, we spend a little more time with the patients, providing additional level of support and education, and letting them know, you know, ways that they can minimize. We have peers who've walked in their shoes, who talk with them. So it really takes a bigger picture, a lot of support to help individuals. And continue, we have to still try to prevent these overdoses. Narcan. At Howard today, we had one of the physicians in with Dr. Bland training other physicians and medical staff on how to use Narcan to prevent these overdose deaths. And also one thing we never mentioned, and I will mention this here real quick, is that, you know, Howard is also involved in research and looking at alternatives and other things in terms of treating individuals with opiate addiction. We have Dr. Willia in psychiatry, who's doing a study looking at natural plant oils along with their regular treatment to help reduce cravings and reduce withdrawal symptoms. All these things help to prevent overdoses and just educate the population on, you know, how we can continue to help and support them so that they don't hit that brick wall and take that last dose that will cause of death.
You know, Dr. Settles Reeves, that was a point that I wanted to bring up earlier, is that at some point there may be a breakthrough, because both of you have mentioned non-addictive pain therapy.
Yes.
You know, where, yeah, okay, you've got a Motrin or you've got a Tylenol or something like that, which they do relieve pain, but they are not addictive. And so maybe what we may look forward to down the road is the breakthrough where we have something that is as effective as an opioid, but non-addictive.
That would be great.
So come on and join over to Howard. We have a lot of things going on. And including the research. So, we need to also, Dr. Bland also will include the fact that, you know, we also have to sometimes treat the mental illness that might be present and help patients get through other types of pain that's going on as well.
Yeah.
Right. And we offer inpatient, outpatient. We have an open access clinic where persons can call and often make same-day appointment, and we also treat persons in our emergency room. We initiate treatment. We can initiate treatment for persons who are dependent on heroin, who present with overdoses, to start them on a medication-assisted treatment to help them manage their addiction.
Is there a number that I can share on our website from both of you, from your perspectives, if someone needs to reach out, if they have concerns either for themselves or for a loved one? Dr. Bland?
Yes. Our department number is 202.
Go ahead.
865-6688.
Mm-hmm.
And
you said 8688?
865-6688.
6688. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Settles Reeves?
And for the Urban Health Initiative, you can also call the Department of Community and Family Medicine at 202-524-0326. And also Dr. Bland's department, we work closely with psychiatry.
Right.
And behavior sciences and community and family medicine. You call, ask for Urban Health Initiative. They know us all well. They'll get you to us.
And as Dr. Settles Reeves said, we provide more than just treatment of the addiction. We also provide services, what are commonly referred to as wraparound services.
Yep.
We assist with housing, employment, and other factors that are involved with recovery.
Well, I thank you both for your expertise as well as your care in dealing with this really sensitive and important issue. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to talk to your audience.
All righty.
Yes, my pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 31st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.